यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमद डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंगा।
नारायणं नमस्कृत्या नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेष भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिके। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
सो वी कंटिन्यूइंग इन चैप्टर 19 टेक्स्ट 39।
सत्यं पुष्पफलं विद्यात् आत्मवृक्षस्य गीयते वृक्षे जीवति तन्नस्याद् अनृतं मूलमात्मनः। सत्यं पुष्पफलं विद्यात् आत्मवृक्षस्य गीयते वृक्षे जीवति तन्न स्याद् अनृतं मूल आत्मनः। सत्यं पुष्पफलं विद्यात् आत्मवृक्षस्य गीयते वृक्षे जीवति तन्न स्याद् अनृतं मूलमात्मनः।
सत्यं ப்ளீஸ்.
சத்யம், த ஃபேக்சுவல் ட்ரூத். புஷ்பஃபலம், த ஃப்ளவர் அண்ட் த ஃப்ரூட். வித்யாத், ஒன் ஷுட் அண்டர்ஸ்டாண்ட். ஆத்ம விருக்ஷஸ்ய ஆஃப் த ட்ரீ ஆஃப் த பாடி. கீயதே, ஆஸ் டிஸ்கிரைப்ட் இன் த வேதஸ். விருக்ஷே அஜீவதி, if the tree is not living. Tat, that pushpa phalam. Na, not. Syat, is possible. Anrutam, untruth. Moolam, the root. Atmanah, of the body. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Text 38 does not have a purport, so we'll do them together so there is a sense of continuity. One might argue that since you have already promised, how can you refuse? O best of the demons, just take from me the evidence of the Bahuvruksha Shruti, which says that a promise is truthful preceded by the word Om, and untruthful if not. The Vedas enjoin that the factual result of the tree of the body is the good fruits and flowers derived from it. But if the bodily tree does not exist, there is no possibility of factual fruits and flowers. Even if the body is based on untruth, there cannot be factual fruits and flowers without the help of the bodily tree. Purport. This shloka explains that in relation to the material body, even the factual truths cannot exist without a touch of untruth. The Mayavadis say, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. The spirit soul is truth and the external energy is untruth. The Vaishnava philosophers, however, do not agree with the Mayavada philosophy. Even if, for the sake of argument, the material world is accepted as untruth, the living entity entangled in the material world is accepted as untruth. The living entity entangled in the illusory energy cannot come out of it without the help of the body. Without the help of the body, one cannot follow a system of religion, nor can one speculate on philosophical perfection. Therefore, the flower and fruit have to be obtained as a result of the body. Without the help of the body, that fruit cannot be gained. The Vaishnava philosophy therefore recommends Yukta Vairagya. It is not that all attention should be diverted for the maintenance of the body, but at the same time, one's bodily maintenance should not be neglected. As long as the body exists, one can thoroughly study the Vedic instructions, and thus at the end of life, one can achieve perfection. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 8:6, Yam Yam Vapi Smaran Bhavam Tyajati Ante Kalevaram. Everything is examined at the time of death. Therefore, although the body is temporary, not eternal, one can take from it the best service and make one's life perfect. Om Ajnanatmirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha கிருபா சிந்துப்ய ஏவ ச பதிதானாம் பாவனேப்யோ வைஷ்ணவேப்யோ நமோ நம. ஸ்ரீ கிருஷ்ண சைதன்ய பிரபு நித்யானந்த ஸ்ரீ அத்வைத கதாதர சிவாசதி கௌர பக்த விருந்த Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It is said, I was going to say something, but now it's not valid. I'll tell you two stories. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sanatana Goswami was incarcerated by the Nawab, the Muslim leader, for the offense of skipping work and staying home and studying Bhagavatam with the devotees. We call it work from home. Many devotees do that, they call it work from home. So when the Nawab came to know, he was very upset. And so there's a dialogue between the two, but skipping that. He incarcerated Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami wanted to leave somehow and make it to meet Lord Chaitanya. And so he bribed the jail keeper and escaped and was making a dash towards Jagannath Puri to meet Lord Chaitanya. Because he was not carrying with him a Krishna lunch box or for that matter anything to eat, he was surviving on the wild berries and fruits that he found along the way in the forest. And he didn't have bottled water, which by the way is more impure than running water. But anyway, he couldn't find always good sources of water. Sometimes there were fresh springs, sometimes it was some well that was abandoned, but he was drinking that water. And naturally what happened is that his body got infected and started on his skin. There were these sores, and these sores were not the dry ones, they were the wet ones that were oozing pus and stuff. But Sanatana Goswami was in a rush to make it to Jagannath Puri, his eagerness to see Lord Chaitanya. So just before he entered Jagannath Puri, he had this realization, look at my body. It is so sinful. I don't think I have high parentage in me. This is humility. I don't think I have high parentage in me. And even with the so-called birth in a Brahmin family, I have engaged my entire youth in serving this Nawab. This Muslim king, who is a cow killer, he kills anyone without any mercy. He threatened to murder the Vaishnavas, and I've been engaging in his service. So this body is very contaminated. It's very, very impure. And now to add to it all these sores on my body, they're oozing pus. How can I enter Jagannath Puri? If the servants of Lord Jagannath are walking by to serve the Lord and they touch me, they'll become contaminated. How can I see Lord Jagannath like this? In fact, I would not be even allowed inside the temple because of my impure condition. This is why Westerners are not allowed in the Jagannath temple, because they're considered to have an impure body. Because not born with samskaras, that was the point. And he says, then worse is Lord Chaitanya will look at me and he will want to embrace me. How can I allow Lord Chaitanya to touch me like this? So I have an idea that I will reach Jagannath Puri in time for the Rath Yatra. And when Lord Jagannath's cart is passing by, I will jump in front of the cart and kill myself. That's the only thing I can do with this body, because it's not fit for anything else. So impure. So he reached Jagannath Puri. As soon as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw him, he ran with his arms stretched out to embrace him. And Sanatana said, "No, no, 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 please don't touch me. No, this is very bad, please." As soon as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him, all his oozing source vanished. And very shining, the original shining body revived for Sanatana Goswami. So this is Lord Chaitanya's very special touch. Because Krishna says in chapter 9, "I am the healing herb, Aushadham Aham." So Krishna's touch is very healing. In fact, his glance is also very healing. He doesn't have to touch us. Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti. So Krishna's glance, if it befalls us or we are able to receive it, then it is the most healing element. So then they were participating in the Rath Yatra, or they were preparing for the Rath Yatra. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu turned to Sanatana Goswami and warned him, "Don't think this body belongs to you. This body now belongs to me, and you have no jurisdiction over it. So you, this idea of killing yourself in front of the cart is not a good idea." Sanatana never revealed to anyone. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as the super soul, knew what was going on inside. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "This body belongs to me." Actually, at the time of initiation, the act of, 2 weeks ago, all the initiates stood up, as they have in the past many years, and with the banana in their hand, they said, "Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagadhitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha Swaha," and they offered the banana in the fire. That is symbolizing or conveying to Krishna that I'm offering my Atma to you. And Atma has meanings. It means the soul, of course. It also means the mind, and it means the body. Here in this verse, it says, "Moolam Atmanaha." Atma here in this verse is the body. So we are offering to our spiritual master our mind, body and soul in his service, that he may use us as he likes in service of Krishna. As he likes. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "That body belongs to me, not to you." Previous to this, when Sri Ramanujacharya, you know the story of Ramanujacharya and Kuresha? In South India, there was a king. That king was a ardent devotee of Lord Shiva. But Ramanujacharya's influence was such that every village he would enter, the entire village would become Vaishnavas just by looking at him. "This is too loud. I'm having difficulty." So the entire village would become devotees of Lord Narayan just by looking at Ramanujacharya and by his grace upon them. Thank you. So his popularity was extending far and wide throughout South India. So the king, this one king who was of Shiva Bhakta, he became very angry because his villages were being converted, if you will. Or he felt that his Shaivism was being threatened. So he plotted with his ministers to invite Ramanujacharya for a conversation. And under the guise of the conversation, he would murder Ramanujacharya. That was the plan. So when the invitation came to Ramanujacharya, Ramanujacharya's disciple Kuresha, he could read through, he knew. He said, Guru Maharaj, please don't go. These guys want to kill you. But they've never met you. So I have an idea. Let me go as Ramanujacharya. Although I'm your disciple, I will dress like you and I will go. So even if you were to kill, it would be my life that would go, not yours. Because your life is more valuable. Your presence in the world is more valuable than my presence. So let me go. So after a lot of debate, it was confirmed that Kuresha would go. So Kuresha went with Mahapurna, his another Siksha Guru. And they reached the king's palace. There was a conversation about Vaishnavism. And the king all along was thinking that this is Ramanujacharya, when it was Kuresha. And just from the conversation, the king understood, this is not an ordinary person. This one is very, very special. This was just the disciple, but still, he said, this is very special, this Ramanujacharya. If we allow him to preach, he will completely destroy Shaivism. So the king arrested Kuresha, who he thought was Ramanujacharya, and Mahapurna, and told them that the punishment for your eloquence is that we're going to pierce your eyes out with hot iron rods. And so in front of everyone they were held, that they can't move. Iron rods, hot iron rods, were poked into their eyes, and both Mahapurna and Kuresha were blinded in a very, very cruel, gory way. Okay? It's very painful. Hot iron. Anywhere on the skin is painful. What to speak of the eyes? And they were left knowing that they would die. So on their way back, somewhere along the way, Mahapurna succumbed to the wounds and left his body. Kuresha returned. And when he returned, Ramanujacharya was very sorry to see this condition of his disciple who put his life on the line for his guru. So he was very, very touched by him. And by seeing Kuresha's love for his guru, that night, Ranganath appeared in his dream, the lord of Sri Rangam, because they were all living in Sri Rangam. So Ranganath appeared in Kuresha's dream and said, Kuresh, I have not seen another disciple like you. There is no Prabhu who is so dedicated to one's guru as you are. So I am very, very pleased with you. I want to give you a benediction. Please ask for it. Whatever you ask. So Kuresha asked for his eyes. Kuresha said, my dear Lord, if anything, please forgive that king for his offense. Please forgive him. So Ranganath was hoping he would say, please return my eyes. So he said, are you sure? Yes, yes, please forgive him. Okay, forgiven. A few days later, Ranganath appeared in his dream again and said, Kuresh, I want to give you a benediction. Ask for whatever you want. I will give it to you. He said, my dear Lord, I know for the fact that whatever he has done to a Vaishnava, his whole kingdom will suffer. Because when the king does something foolish, even the subjects pay for it. Said, please, let all the other living entities in the kingdom not get affected by this. Please, protect all of them. Ranganath like, okay. Are you sure? You want anything else? Ask for it.
this is good enough for me. So Ramanujacharya came to know that Ranganath has come twice in Kuresh's dream and asking him. So Ramanujacharya asked, "Why are you not asking for your eyesight back?" Kuresh said, "My eyesight is not important. It's not important to me what happens to this body." So Ramanujacharya chastised him. "This body, Kuresha, belongs to me. I'm the guru. So you have to preserve it properly. So don't say, 'Oh, what's the use of eyesight? This body belongs to me, so I order you. Make sure that if you get another chance, you ask for your eyesight back. Because I have to use it in Krishna's service. How can you decide what to do with it?'" You understanding the line of argument? "How can you decide?" "Yes, master, whatever you say." So Ranganath came back again in his dream. "Kuresh, you want anything? Ask whatever you want. My dear Lord, please restore my eyesight." His eyes were restored, eyesight was fully restored. Because Ramanujacharya was teaching, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching the message that the body belongs to Guru for service. Not just, you know, "I don't need this body." So why these two stories? Because that's the connection to this verse today. Shukracharya was the guru of the Daityas. When Bali Maharaj agreed that "I will give charity to Vamana," Shukracharya knew this Vamana is tricky. This Vamana has come to cheat. Right? And the cheating is, he will ask for some charity. In fact, what he will ask for is the entire kingdom back. And Bali has worked very hard to come to this position. And if he loses it all, I will lose it all as well. Right? Because I am getting dakshina from him. So I cannot afford to lose, you know, my great position as charity and the guru of Bali Maharaj. If he becomes a beggar on the street, I have nothing for me. So he told him, "Don't give in charity." And Bali Maharaj said, "How can I refuse? I already said yes. A man is only worth his words. If I say something, I stand by it." According to Bali Maharaj, that's the base character of a person. So Shukracharya is the perfect attorney. An attorney looks through all the law books and finds the perfect loophole. And so the loophole he found out is, "Yes, yes, it's true that everything that you promise must be done. But if you don't say Om before that, then that's not considered, you know, final. It's just some verbal discussion. And don't, if you want to take my words, I'm quoting you this particular shastra, the Vedic literature called the Bahvaracha. Bahvaracha Shruti. It is said in those Vedas, Your Honor, in such and such book, it is said that if you don't say Om before you make a promise, the promise is not considered true. It's all right if you don't do it." And you can always say, "I never said Om." Suppose we tell someone, "Okay, I have, can you please take care of this service?" Whatever it is. "Yes, yes, I'll come." And we don't show up. And they ask you, "Why you didn't come?" "Oh, I did not say Om. So you can't punish me for it. It's not like I gave up on my words. I didn't say Om." So from today, everything we have to say, "Say Om, yes, you know, Om, yes, I'm going to do this one." So Shukracharya said, "If you didn't say Om, you're okay. No problem, Om." And then he gives an analogy to support his argument. And his analogy is this promise that you made is by using the faculty of your body. The body itself is not true. So how can whatever you say be true? Ha ha. That's the argument. And Prabhupada's in the purport arguing against it, saying, whoa, whoa, hold on a second. Yes, everything that is derived from the body, pushpa phalam, what are the fruits and flowers of the body? What is the fruit? One's speech is fruit or flower? Flower, because it is decorative. What are the other fruits from one's body? One's actions, very good. What else? Children, very good. What else? One's actions, one's children, one's possessions, one's money. They're all fruits of one's body, in the sense the body is used in labor and you derive a fruit. It's money, possessions, and then children, wealth, family, land, property. They're all considered fruits and flowers. So he says that this fruit and flower, you should know, atmavrikshasya giyate, the tree, the body is considered a tree, and all the things that are born out of that body are considered fruits and flowers. So if there is no tree, how can you have fruit and flower? Fair enough? That's the argument he's making. If there's no body, if there's no tree, there's no fruit, no flower. So this body is untrue, Bali Maharaj. It is illusion. So it, whatever you say, it doesn't have to stand. A Prabhupada saying, which is important for us, is in the purport, that this is the Mayavada philosophy, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. Brahma means the soul. Spirit is truth, everything else is untruth. Mithya is just a apparition, it doesn't exist. For example, according to Mayavada philosophy, this body doesn't exist. This floor doesn't exist. This table doesn't exist. This book doesn't exist. This mic stand doesn't exist. What I'm speaking doesn't exist. It's just our illusion by which we think these things exist. So the question then is, does a Mayavadi feel hungry? Does he or she eat anything? What are they eating? Illusion? In the shape of potatoes? Is the sabji very nice? Oh, that's illusion. How can illusion be nice? Should the potato be cooked? Can they eat it raw? Because if you prefer cooked versus raw, then you're picking illusion. In fact, you shouldn't even eat anything because the potato doesn't exist. And when they walk out of the room, they should not walk out of the door, because there is nothing called door. There's nothing called wall. They should be able to walk anywhere they like. You understand? How illusion, they say everything is illusion, but they can't live it. Mayavada philosophy is the most unpractical, the most impractical, I should say, the most impractical philosophy. It sounds fantastic, but it is completely impractical. Nobody can live it. Because as soon as you say everything is one, there's a joke, right? What did the Buddhist order? at the restaurant. He said, can I have one with everything? Okay. One with everything. Can I have number one with everything? So that's the Buddhist diet. Because everything is one. So they can't distinguish. As soon as you distinguish, then your philosophy is breaking down. You can't say, that's a door, that's a wall. You know the famous incident between Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and a Mayavadi. There was a Mayavadi in Calcutta who was giving big speeches. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati sent him a basket of mangoes. I said, I don't know if you never visited India, you don't know what mangoes perhaps really mean in value. In India, we have about 500 varieties of mangoes in different shapes and forms and sizes. And some of the famous mangoes are the ones that, there are many famous ones. Some of them are, you know, particular size. And when you cut them, they have sugary orange pulp in it. And when you eat that, you will get intoxicated. It is so decadently tasty. Beautiful mangoes. Different grades of sourness and sweetness. Some of them are yellow with some sourness. Some of them are orange with sweetness like you've never eaten. And a whole range. And then what to speak of the green ones, which are the raw ones, which they make for pickles and all of that. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati sent him a basket full of ripe mangoes. And in that basket of ripe mangoes, he placed one green raw mango, which is sour, and sent it. And when the Mayavadi opened the basket, he knew he was defeated. Because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur defeated his entire philosophy without uttering a word. Because here's the dilemma. Which mango should the Mayavadi pick up? If he picks the ripe mango, that means he has made a distinction that there is something called ripe and something called raw. Versus the philosophies, everything is one. So why would he pick a ripe mango? Right? But if he tried to be over smart and he picked a raw mango, what would you think of him? He's a fool number one. If you have a basket full of sweet mangoes, why would you take a raw mango? You can't take this, you can't take that. And he was defeated. He accepted defeat. That was Bhaktisiddhanta's challenge, without saying a word. When Prabhupada was in MIT in New York, Boston area, he was talking. One Indian student challenged Prabhupada, Swamiji, isn't it all one in the end anyway? Prabhupada caught his collar and said, why are you wearing a shirt? Why not you wearing a cotton ball? Why do you want to make it a shirt? And the Prabhupada said, if everything is one, why do you put your food here and not here? Why are you making the distinction? Because variety exists. Don't say, oh no, 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 that's only in the conditioned state. In the enlightened state, there is no distinction. But even in the enlightened stage, if someone walks out of a door, climbs up a stair, puts on clothes, you're making a distinction. You get the point? So it's very impractical. So Prabhupada's telling us in the purport, that's one philosophy, one thing to know, that this body, although illusory, exists. And the fruits and flowers of this body are factual. So if we say something, we stand by it. Okay. The next one, another point is, that Prabhupada says in the purport, is we may sometimes consider that this body is not useful.
We have a little immature understanding because we hear the philosophy that we are supposed to be renounced, that the body is the source of attachment. And as soon as we hear that something is a cause of a problem, then we tend to act in diametrically opposite ways, as if it was the right thing to do as a measure, a countermeasure for this. For example, if we are told such and such is our attachment, then we immediately behave with aversion towards that same thing. Oh, yuck, that is so bad. For example, there are many examples, but for example, our parents and relatives and friends. Previously, perhaps we were very attached to them or whatever. Once we come to Krishna consciousness, we hear that all bodily relationships are maya. Everyone is Atma Saineshu, Asatsu, Api. That they are all fallible soldiers. So we look at our relatives, friends, parents, maya. And suddenly our parents and relatives become demons because they are eating onion and garlic and meat. They are bad association. They are the, by talking to them, I'm opening the doorway to hell, etc. We behave in averse ways. Aversion is the flip side of attachment. So we think, oh, this body, it's all right. I don't have to eat anything at all. It's fine. Or I don't have to sleep much. Not necessary. And we do silly things by discounting the value of the body. And what happens? A few years of continuing like that, and then our body completely gives up on us, or we are sick, and then we realize that without the body, we can barely chant our Hare Krishna. So we tend to, in our immature ways, we tend to neglect them, neglect our body, and then when it gives away, when it causes problems, then we are overly cautioned and overly attached to our body, our health, such that we cannot execute our Krishna consciousness properly. Without this body, we cannot do any aspect of bhakti yoga. We cannot. That's the gross body. What about the subtle body? That's also important. We need to take care of our gross body and we need to take care of our subtle body. We take care of our gross body by eating on time, eating the right quantity, and eating the right thing. Prasadam of Krishna, eaten properly on time, and eaten the right quantity. When you overdo something, it hurts. It may not hurt now, but it will hurt. It will hurt very soon. And if we do too less of it, that will also hurt. So where does Krishna speak about this? Particularly, not just he's happy, his miseries go away, and that is why he's happy. And the verse before that in 6th chapter is, one should be very regulated in one's activities of eating, sleeping, recreation, etc. So Krishna says, one who's regulated in one's activities of eating, sleeping, working, and recreation, such a yogi is free of all material miseries and he's happy. Yukta ahara viharasya. Yukta svapnava bodhasya, yukta karmasu, yogo bhavati dukkha. Dukkha, one's miseries are burnt away by being regulated.
So what is regulation? We have different meanings and understandings of the word regulation. What is your understanding of the word regulation? What do you understand when we use the word regulation? We do things in regulation. In an organized fashion. Okay, that's one meaning. It's not a complete meaning, but that's one meaning. It's an organized manner. Scheduled. Okay, that's regulations of freedom. What does that mean? What is the word? One who's regulated in one's eating, recreation, sleeping and work. So what does regulation mean? No.
There's a well-examined purpose behind those activities. Thus they are regulated.
What's the definition of the word regulated? The oil industry was regulated for a very long time. What does regulated mean? Ordered. Ordered.
There's an authority.
Regulated means it is overseen by someone and prescribed by someone. The oil industry was regulated. The airline industry was regulated. We, as human beings, are supposed to be regulated. By who? Guru. And? Shastra, sadhu, guru. Guru, sadhu and shastra regulate our life. They tell us, you should be living like this. This is how you should be operating your life. When we live according to those instructions of shastra, then we are living a regulated life. If regulated only means orderly or... What was the word you said? Organized manner. So pick someone who's training for the marathon. They get up on time, early. They eat very little. They sleep sufficiently. They exercise very much, right? They're very organized about their recreation. They're very organized. They'll go out, but they won't have more than one drink, because they're training. They will eat certain kinds of meats, or lean meat only, okay, or something like that. They're very organized. Or they will eat certain foods only. Do their miseries go away? No. Why? Because they're organized. The way we use the word regulated, scheduled, but it's not guided. So it's very, very important that along with being organized and scheduled, that it is guided. It is guided by Shastra, it is guided by Guru. Only then will a person feel freedom from misery. The way Prabhupada structured our day, if we were to structure our own day and be very consistent, we will not be very happy. We're happy following this regulation that Prabhupada gave. This is the way the day should go. You do Mangalarti at this time. You chant japa at this time. You study at this time. You eat at this time. You do seva at this time. You do this and do this and do this. This is given by Prabhupada. So it's regulated. So the point is that our body should not be considered illusion and useless. It has great value. We should take care of the body carefully, but with the purpose. The purpose is that this is property of Sri Guru. And its being in its good condition is necessary to fulfill the orders of my Guru, so that I get the ultimate benefit. Without this body, I cannot go back to Godhead. The soul cannot feel liberated. I need the body to be in its perfect condition to become fully free of it. That's the verse, that's what Prabhupada said. If we don't take care of the body, we will come back to another one. So Bali Maharaj is going to then, he's going to give more example. He's going to take that tree analogy, that you have a tree and then you have these fruits. He's going to take it further in the next few verses before Bali Maharaj says, well, hold on a second. This doesn't make any sense. So, it's coming up. Any comments, questions? Raktak?
I'm wondering, what is the result of like having our own schedule, or like not having so much like someone looking over us like directly all the time, especially in the early beginning stages of Krishna consciousness?
Having our own schedule, nothing wrong with it, except that generally it is tinged with what I like. And what I like is a function of the mind. Or it's also tinged with what I don't like. So regardless of what schedule it is always nice to take it to some senior devotee or guru and get it saying, this is how I'm, is that all right? Because they can pick out from that, you know, discrepancies of what may actually hurt us. So always, one thing I've learned in my life, that regardless of the situation and regardless of how advanced we may become, consulting with other devotees should never be given up, whoever we are. In fact, Srila Prabhupada would sometimes consult with his disciples. What do you think we should do? Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, would consult with Uddhava. Uddhava, what do you think we should do? Lord Ramachandra, the Personality of Godhead, would go to Vasishtha Muni and say, what do you think we should do? I have this idea. What do you think? Does that make sense? Do you have any input for me? And they would say, oh Lord Ram, this is all right. You may want to do something else. Uddhava would say, oh Krishna, although he's the Personality of Godhead. So consulting should never be given up. Okay? Always, always, always helpful. Because we are the one who's in the midst of a situation cannot assess for himself or herself what is best. Cannot. You may have a good idea, but it's very difficult to fully assess for oneself. Only one who's outside the situation can have an objective point of view. So no harm in checking. And if they say, yes, makes sense, keep going, we're good. Yudhishthir Maharaj, who was dharma personified, always consulted with others. What do you think we should do? It's a good habit. If I had time, I'd explain to you in terms of the regulative principles why it is important to consult. One of the vows we take is no gambling. What are the vows you shall take? No gambling. Right? So when we act whimsically, we're gambling. We're gambling with Maya, or Krishna's illusory energy. Because we may think something's right and I act whimsically and we get a severe reaction for it, then we have gambled. So one way to counteract gambling is to consult with others. What do you think? It removes the speculative component in our thinking. Interesting, huh? Once we did a seminar on the regulative principles, and each principle we discussed for more than 2 hours. What it means. What does no meat eating mean? Is it enough to give up meat eating? Madhava Gauranga, with all his enthusiasm, said, no meat, fish or eggs, coffee or tea. He did the extra embellishment, the better. Didn't you say that? Huh? He said garlic and onion too. You forgot to say chocolate though. Sinner. Thou shalt sin. But what does it mean? No meat eating. What does that regulative principle mean? There's things behind it that actually have great depth to it. Raktak Prabhu? Speak in the mic, please.
Sorry. Is there a difference between all is one and the statement that Krishna makes, one without a second?
No. Of course, yes. All is one is an impersonal statement that variety doesn't exist. And when we say everything is Krishna, first of all, it is a personal idea that it is Krishna. And as soon as you say Krishna, then along with Krishna, then Krishna's energies are also accepted. Because to say that there is a person without personality, without energies, then there cannot be personality. So we say, the language we use is everything is Krishna or Krishna's. There's no third thing. And everything that is Krishna's is Krishna in the sense that it is simultaneously one and different. When we say prasadam is non-different than Krishna, it's not the deity, but it is non-different from Krishna because it is Krishna's energy. When you say everything is one, it is very misguiding because we don't know what that one is. Is everything onion? No. Is everything one? Okay. Is everything nitrogen gas? No. Everything is one. What is that one? Brahma. Brahman means existence. That existence that doesn't die. Okay, what is that? No, we don't know what it is, but it is that. Okay, is it this? No, not this. It's called the Neti philosophy. Na iti, not this. Okay, is it the body? No, not this. Okay, is it the mind? Not this. Is it the intelligence? No. What is it? It is that. What is it? It is that. Tattvamasi, you are that. What is that? We don't know. I can tell you what you're not, but we cannot tell you what you are. Your awareness. As soon as you know that I am, then you're Brahman realized. Really? Therefore, it's very vague. It is only true in the sense that it says you're not this body. Okay, fine. I'm not this body. Good enough. What am I? Well, don't ask that question. Is you not this body? Jitendra Prabhu? Subal Prabhu?
And Sankirtan, the devotee's example was given approaching a Mayavadi. It's trying to sell him a book, you know, it's all one. And the guy reaches for his wallet and he has a 10 and a $100 bill in there and he offers him the 10. And then the devotee said, well, if it's all one, then just give me the 100 and the 10. So he didn't know what to say. So the devotee walked away with $110. So those are
and
just
after
some.
After that, he didn't know what to say. The Prabhupada would also say, if it's all one, give me your wallet. It doesn't matter if it's in your pocket or mine. It's all one.
Hare Krishna.
I was wanted to ask you, you know, in your experience sort of as a temple president for many years, there is this situation that always comes in general, specifically with the eating regulations and, you know, what to eat and this and that. Of course, you know, you have to put it in perspective, and what you hear, that you have to take care of the body in order to be able to function in Krishna consciousness. So, and in general, you know, when a devotee hit a little bit of misery in different degrees, then, oh, you know, the eating is either this or either that or that and that, and then I have to go and make all these different arrangements that can have different levels of complication. And what would you say to that situation? You know, how to balance that sense that you have to try to keep up, you know, a strong, healthy body for service, but at the same time, you know, you become so distracted in the maintenance of the body that the misery doesn't, you were pointing out, regulation, if you are regulated in these different habits, you're free from misery. You can be happy, but that's not the case necessarily.
Most of the time, about 95% of the time, a person's eating is connected to what? Sex? No. That's after. Before? Before? What leads a person to pick a certain kind of food? Taste? No. How the mind is. That is why there's this whole concept of what we call comfort food. Foods, certain foods for certain people are very comforting. Chocolate, ice cream, cheese, spicy, salty. For example, for me, I know when I'm very stressed, I go for the fried and the salty stuff. But that's comforting for me. I know for sure. And as I'm eating it, I know, hey, what's going on here? For someone it's this, and for some it's sweets. They're very comforting. So it's an indication that our health, a lot of our health has to do with the state of our mind. When a devotee is happy, they're inspired, it doesn't matter whether you give them something to eat or not. They will not even care for it. You've seen in our own lives, when food is scarce, or it's not so tasty, whatever it is, if you're feeling inspired in Krishna consciousness, we're fine. But as soon as the mind's not inspired, it's not feeling, yeah, Krishna ki jai, something else, then it's too, this is not okay for me, I can't digest it, you know, I can't sleep at night, these things come up. Because how the mind is, naturally, the subtle body decides the gross body. This is Bhagavad Gita basic philosophy, right? Whatever is the subtle body, that decides the gross body. Yam yam swampi smaran bhavam tyajati ante kalevaram. At the change of the body, you get another body depending upon how the subtle body is. This is exactly. So it's not just the next life. Even in this life, the body changes according to how the subtle body is changing. So when there is too much anxiety, too much worry, depression, sadness, whatever it is, whole range of things, then the body changes. Our digestive capacities change, our things change, comforting certain foods change. I want to eat more like this, I want to eat less like that. And I found that somehow or the other, you bring the devotees back to being happy and worry-free, then it doesn't matter what they're eating. That's the basic principle. I've tried very hard for it. Now on the other side, we've also made all these arrangements, you know, this for that Prabhu, this for this Mataji, that for that. It was extremely miserable for the cooks. They were dying. Like, man, every day so many varieties. You cannot put any dairy in this because now this Prabhu is all vegan. And this Prabhu cannot eat without ghee because the Ayurveda doctor told him to eat with ghee. This Prabhu wants no spice. That Prabhu cannot eat rice. This Prabhu is like, and then there are others like, where's the spice, man? What is this? So you have to put spice for the cooks were dying. Is this too much? My reference point is always back to Prabhupada's disciples. Prabhupada fed them gulab jamuns fried in ghee, puris fried in ghee, halwa made in ghee, and they ate tons and gallons of it. But you know what? When they were young, of course, maybe they can't digest it now, I agree. But when they were young, they served Prabhupada from the time they opened their eyes to the time they closed their eyes for the night. They were serving Prabhupada non-stop. So they digested everything. It didn't matter. Chandamali Maharaj told me, New Vrindavan, they were so poor that they would eat oats and pour some water in the oats. That's all they got to eat. And they looked forward to Sunday feast because you would get a few almonds in it. That's it. But they survived. They survived very well. Of course, I'm not saying that's how we should live. The point is, let's look at what's going on inside. Mostly our mind is not too happy. It's not feeling I'm connected to Krishna. That's when our desire for... And naturally the body is hurting, then you know, you can't digest it. If you can't digest it, you can't overload it with something. It's a vicious cycle from there on. But the reference point is always Prabhupada's disciples. Man, they were people who were even more drastically, you know, this way before they met Prabhupada. Some were eating what's called microbiotic foods. I don't know what that means. Some were eating only raw foods. They were from California. And when they were given gulab jamuns, fried in ghee, they got hooked onto them. Because Prabhupada taught, it's not what you're attached to, it's prasadam. Krishna will take care. I mean, that's my overall, but we don't kill our bodies, I understand. So we have good variety every day, take what works, and be satisfied. So the previous class I spoke was on being satisfied, and that's one of the things. It's the dissatisfaction that hurts mostly. And I found, I am like that too. I know that very well. I'm on both sides, both as the president, trying to figure out how to keep the devotees happy, but as also as a person who, because of stress and all that, I know that I have an urge, and I know that I will run towards the salty and fried stuff because of what's going on for me.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. One of your last comments, which is the same as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, it says everything is tested at the time of death.
Everything's tested at the time of death, yes.
And you kind of mentioned in your last class, kind of related that of course we're all facing death at every moment, but you were mentioning in one of your other classes of couple of weeks ago is that we're always tested, so everything could potentially be the death of our spiritual life. Like Bali, he could, when someone cheats us like Vamana, we want to kill him usually. Or Haridasa Kaur, he was tested by the prostitute. But my question is kind of related to that point, is that even though the Lord doesn't give us his great devotees memory all the time, like Lord Shiva, he was seduced by Mohini form, so he didn't remember the instruction of this of morality or whatever. So my question essentially is that what are some steps we could do to you know, remember the instructions, you know, of things that potentially the death of our spiritual life.
Remembrance comes from Shravanam Kirtanam, Smaranam is an outcome of Shravanam Kirtanam. So the more there is Shravanam Kirtanam, the more there is Smaranam. But if our hearing is not consistent and our Kirtanam is not consistent, then Smaranam is very difficult. Kirtanam, not just singing Kirtan. Well, that's wonderful too. Kirtanam also means when we are with each other, are we discussing important instructions we have received and how we are trying to follow those instructions. And the more we discuss it, the more the remembrance comes. You know, this is what we tell people on the street. If you tell them at the time of death, if you remember Krishna, you'll go back to Krishna. And if they say, oh, that's the case, then at the time of dying, I'll remember him. And our argument always is, how will you remember if you don't hear and chant? So same answer. If we don't hear and chant among ourselves, we will not remember the instructions. Same principle applies to us as it applies to the karmis, as we call them.
You know, the definition you'd given of regulation, that it's being controlled by sadhu. And,
yeah, guided by.
Yeah,
yes.
Guided. Yeah. So, like on a personal level, one has to, you know, order one's day, and there is the structure, as you pointed out, your Prabhupada has given. And then the complexity comes that one's also maintaining another parallel structure in one's home. So then one is having to, you know, find that regulation for the body in between all that. So sometimes, at least on a personal level, the body is compromised because the priority is given to the performance of those activities of worship. So, say, for instance, the eating, that will often have to shift. So, and one is aware of, you know, the subtle disturbance of digestive fire, because they are obviously the best ideal times to attend to that. So if one were to take all this into account, what would you say would be the way to soothe the mind, knowing that, being quite conscious that there can be a little disturbance being caused by one's adjustment in that way, even though one is consciously choosing that?
Usually in one's life, multiple principles operate, and one always has to give up one lower principle for the sake of a higher principle. The higher principle is there is a call for Krishna's service. And that supersedes one's otherwise normal order of things. Second is, if it's in case of an emergency, rules don't apply for emergencies. For example, if whatever, there's an emergency in whichever area of our temple, there's an emergency. We don't say, yeah, but you know, it disturbs my regulation. Then we fall into the trap of being attached to rules and regulations. What's it called? Niyamagraha. In Nectar of Instruction, is this that we hold on to a rule as if it is the, you know, gospel truth. At the same time, neglecting the rules are also a problem for bhakti. That it is at these points, especially for young devotees like us, consulting with someone is always helpful. Because I'm not saying to you, I'm talking about us on this side of the room, on this side of the room, myself. Because we're always making, life is full of trade-offs, constant trade-offs. There's always, we have to let go of something to hold on to something else. So either in emergency, or if not emergency, then it is once in a while, occasionally we'll have to give up certain rules and regulation. Now, there's a whole different perspective to this also. Nectar of devotion and nectar of instruction, and Prabhupada give us that there are three stages of devotional service: the Kanishta, the Madhyama, and the Uttamadhikari. The Kanishta should not give up regulation. As soon as a Kanishta gives up regulation, their bhakti goes away. They completely are out of whack, as they call. A Madhyama can give up regulation for the sake of preaching or for the sake of serving Krishna. It's possible. And still they can be resilient and not get mentally or bodily disfigured, if you will. It doesn't throw them out of whack. For example, you go for preaching programs and you can't eat 3 hours before going to bed. It's after the program and this and that, or you come back late, you don't have much rest. And as far as Uttamadhikaris, they have no regulation anyway. They're not meant to. Whatever they do is it doesn't matter to them. Like Prabhupada would travel all around the world. Wherever he would land, his schedule would continue from there on. He had never the concept of jet lag, nothing. I don't know how he did that. And Prabhupada once in the middle of the night would say, I want hot puris. You know the story of Shrutakirti. Shrutakirti Prabhu was from America. He was Prabhupada's servant and cook. Prabhupada once called him and said, it was in the evening. Prabhupada said, get me hot chips. So he went and took a potato and nicely sliced it and made him nice potato chips and presented to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, what is this? Chips, Prabhupada. I said, this is not chips. What? These are chips, Prabhupada. I said, these are not chips. A few days later, someone from the Prabhupada was in India, I think, with Shrutakirti Prabhu. I forget the details of the story. And Prabhupada said to someone else, I want some chips. So they made French fries. And Prabhupada said, yes. And he called Shrutakirti, these are chips. Because the British and the English, when you say chips, it means French fries. He said, oh, French fries. It's chips means something else, right? And so Prabhupada would ask something, you know, I want chips, I want, you know, something else. So for them, it's irrelevant. There's no such concept. So it all depends on where one is in one's trajectory, that like this or a little that. Okay. Talking of being regulated, I need to head out. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.